Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Hello and welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning into the show. All right, let's dive into today's topic, the entrepreneur and the reset. So I want to ask you a question. Now, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're a business professional, would you know if you needed to step back and maybe take a little pause in your career? Would you recognize the signs to stop, reevaluate, and build a stronger, better, and healthier you? Well, this is the perfect segue to my special guest today. Her name is Taryn Rose, and Taryn created one of the most successful and highly coveted brands in footwear. She's an orthopedic surgeon turned shoe designer. She married fashion and function in 1998, changing the footwear industry forever. What started as something in her garage grew to a $40 million business with boutiques all over the country. She's been called a serial entrepreneur, and rightly so, and she's here to share her career journey with you. Taryn, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you, and that is quite an exciting journey. So you were an orthopedic surgeon, right? You build this unbelievable company that you sold for $40 million. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the backstory of Taryn Rose Shoes?
Sure. Between 1992 and 1997, I was training as a young orthopedic surgery resident. And during that process, I was still very feminine and very much a fashionista. The problem was I was running around the hospital for 10, 12 hours every day. And the shoes that I had available to me, and I spent money on shoes. You know, I bought really good brands, Calvin Klein, Prada, and Ferragamo. But they were just not comfortable enough. And I always thought, geez, if we could just build shoes that had that comfort as the guiding principle, but yet not forgetting about fashion and style, it would be so much easier because I had to rework my shoes, put pads in, try to change straps, things like that. And then at the same time, I did a research project, which was required for my graduation, and I chose the topic of diabetic footwear. People with diabetes have nerve complications. It's ironic, they're both numb and have pain. It's called neuropathy.
Okay.
And so they need special shoes to protect their feet from damage because they cannot feel an ulcer. You know, like you and I can feel when a stitch is rubbing in the wrong place and we're starting to get a blister. Diabetic patients can't feel that. So there are special shoes that people with neuropathy wear. The other problem they have is because they can't feel, they can't manage shock absorption across their joints. So their joints end up getting destroyed. So their shoes have to be without any seams. They have to have a lot of room. And they use a product that I discovered in diabetic foot clinic called Poron. And Poron was developed by NASA as a shock absorber. And it was used in shoes because it had memory.
So as a shock absorber, when you talk about NASA, the shock absorption, is that in rocket ships?
Yes.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so like Like a lot of technology that's developed by government agencies, it's then taken to be commercialized and have other uses. And one of those uses for PORON was in diabetic shoes. So when I looked at the data, it showed that people were non-compliant with wearing their diabetic shoes, even at the risk of losing their limbs, because they were so ugly.
Oh.
You know, you look like Frankenstein. So I thought, what if we were able to design shoes that were more attractive, more acceptable? They certainly were not fashionable, but, you know, they were, they didn't stick out like you were Frankenstein walking around. And I was lucky enough to get the help of Nike, who, you know, they made the shoes and they taught me how shoes were made. And, you know, in our study, the compliance rate doubled. So while this wasn't, you know, a miracle cure, it addressed the psychological pain that diabetic patients have wearing ugly shoes that were stigmatized. Now they could have shoes that were, you know, more mainstream.
Yes.
So I actually had the models, and I thought for a few months that, okay, I could start a company to sell these shoes. But then I realized that that wasn't my passion, because fashion was really what I loved. You know, I used to joke that Vogue would come and, you know, I'd be reading it from cover to cover, and my orthopedic journals were still in the cellophane stacking up on the floor. So I'm so happy I listened to my heart, and sure, that's what I would encourage everyone out there to do. So, you know, because I bet you if I had gone to business school, the analysis would have been, you know, go into diabetic shoes. It's a straightforward business. You've got, you know, a locked in demographic. All of the numbers fit. But being an entrepreneur is not just about the numbers. They play a big part, but you also have to have that love and passion that makes you run out the door and get to work every day, and really dream your wildest dreams. So I started Taryn Rose, and the story is actually kind of funny. You know how when you look back and you realize it was better that you didn't know what you didn't know?
Yes.
So I had no contacts in the shoe industry, but I was very good at retail therapy. So I had a very good salesperson at Barney's, and she would always chat about her two friends who would come and visit her every August in Italy when they were on vacation. So I asked her, I said, do you think your two friends would know anyone in the shoe industry? You know, it's kind of ridiculous in the sense, because it's like asking an American, do you know anyone that's, you know, in the burger industry?
Right.
But luckily, Giuseppe and Fabrizio, they one owned a factory and the other had a tannery. So I was plugged in, and imagine that in 1997, I connected with them by phone, and they said, okay, meet us at the shoe show. We'll meet you at the west door of the Milan Convention Center. And without cell phones, I don't know how we did it, but we connected. You know, I'd never met them. Two guys described as wearing white shirts, you know, but when you have people who keep their word and show up when they're supposed to show up, it goes a long way. And that's an enduring theme that I'll get back to later. So I connected with them, and even how I got there was actually really funny. because I called up my travel agent and I said, okay, I need to go to Milan on these dates. And she starts laughing. She says, you've got to be the Pope to get a room during those days. She's like, there's the fashion shows, there's the Milan furniture show, there's the leather show, the shoe show, every show is in town. The nearest I can get you is 2 hours away. And I thought, oh, I can't have that. You know, it's my first time ever going to Milan. So I called up my salesperson at Gucci.
Nice to know people.
And I said, yeah, well, you know, spending that kind of money pays off. And I said, Heather, I'm sure Gucci has reserved rooms somewhere in Milan as a corporation. And sure enough, not only was I set up in a 5-star hotel in Milan, wow, but it was at the Gucci corporate rate, which was nothing.
Oh,
it was
nice.
An incredible deal. I never, you know, had that same price ever again after that, because Heather went on to become the assistant to Brad Pitt.
Oh.
So, yeah, she was that good, you know.
That's good.
I connected with these two guys. I gave them, you know, what I was looking for, the specs, and the difficulty was that in Italy there was really no regard for fashion. I was told repeatedly, you know, this is, women don't care. I don't know why you're doing this. And I would send them faxes. And during those days, what were those machines? Well, the faxes didn't come out in sheets. It was those long rolls of thermal, and they would paper, you know, and they joked that every time I sent them something, they rolled the thing all the way out into the streets because I was so detailed in my instructions.
Technology.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny. And by the way, as an orthopedic surgeon, I never sent a fax. So when I started my business, I was like looking at the machine going, how do you use this? Because I was super spoiled. I would run into the office and ask one of the secretaries, can you send this fax off? What happened was, so that was the manufacturing side. So I got them to make a few shoes, and then I had my samples, and now I'm like, okay, how do I sell these? So I go to my favorite shoe salesperson at Neiman Marcus, and I say, who later on, by the way, went to work for me in my Beverly Hills boutique.
Oh, that's terrific.
So these are great relationships. I said, can you give me the number of your favorite shoe rep, someone that you really like and is nice? Because I figured someone like that would be more willing to spend time with me. And so I connected with her, and she was so sweet. She's like, honey, you are starting out. I get paid over $100,000 a year. You're never going to be able to afford my services. But here's some names of key buyers in the area, and you can go track them down yourself. And one of the names was the shoe department manager down at Nordstrom in South Coast Plaza. Sungcho Rothy was her name. So, and back in those days, the buying was done locally at the stores with Nordstrom. So I went down to the shoe department in South Coast Plaza, and I started looking for name tags, and I found her, and I gave my elevator pitch, and she said, okay, well, come in next week with your samples. And off I went. I had my first 500 pair order. And, you know, back in those days with the, and the photographer that I used to photograph the shoes, his best friend owned a shoe store in Seattle. So what happened was when I got my Nordstrom order, his friend came on board and told his other friends that were boutique owners. So I started off with, you know, 5 boutiques and a Nordstrom order.
That's fantastic.
And everything was shipped into my garage. And, you know, my neighbors thought I was very strange.
What's she doing in there?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I lived in an affluent area called Palos Verdes, where the women belonged to the country club. They weren't in their garage talking to the UPS man.
Right. That's so funny. But look at how everything came together from your persistence and passion and networking and knowing people. And this person knew that person. That is an amazing story. But there's one thing. So as you earlier, when you said that you were doing that project, right, and you recognized yes. with diabetics and their shoes, is that something that just the regular person has to think about as far as footwear as a foundation of health? And are we doing damage if we're, you know, not really, we might be paying the high cost for shoes and we're paying a price for that? Or how would you explain, how should the normal person look at health and their shoes?
Well, you know, in the ancient Chinese or Eastern philosophy, your feet is very important. That's why we have reflexology. It's considered the second heart and the second brain, right? So you put so much pressure and wear and tear on your feet. I say, you know, it's like tires. They do wear out eventually. So the less wear and tear you put on your feet, because unfortunately you can't rotate your feet and
no.
you can't replace your feet.
No.
So it's better to take care of them. And it's also, you know, the feet, it has to give feedback to the brain, for example, what's called proprioception. There's a lot of proprioceptive receptors in your feet, so it affects your balance. You also want your feet aligned because it affects your knees and your back.
And your hips, too.
So,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
What's that?
Your hips, too, it would affect.
Oh, yes, your hips. Right. So it is the complete alignment of your body. And, you know, for me also, it's your mood. You know, it's this morning I read a quote that vibes speak much louder than words. And my vibes are screaming when my feet are in pain.
Yeah, mine too. So what yeah. is the difference? So now you have the new Taryn Rose brand and you're relaunching that. So who is the Taryn Rose woman of today versus what you first developed early on? Is there a difference?
No, she, back in 2004, when I could finally afford a branding company, they went out and did the research and they came back and said, you know, your customers are the alpha women. And back then that word wasn't used as readily as today. So it was like, oh, wow. And, you know, the alpha woman is the leader of her group. She doesn't follow other people. She doesn't suffer fools. She's not a fashion victim. And she wants to be able to express her very best self always. So we still have that same customer. And we've always had my philosophy was that there was not any age group that we targeted, because I think that there is a prejudice that once you get over a certain age, you know, you become frumpy. I don't think that's true back then, and I still don't think it's true today. And also as a brand, I never used models that were under 30, because the prejudice was that only, you know, women under 30 were beautiful. Well, I like 35 because women older than 35 could relate to that.
Sure.
And women younger than 35 aspired to being, you know, confident and more with it when you're in your mid-30s. So So that was my philosophy was it's not about an age demographic, but about a psychographic. So we had young customers down even into their teens whose mom brought them in because they wanted their girls to take care of their feet, all the way to women well into their 80s. I used a model called Carmen for one of our ad campaigns. You know, our ad campaign had Miss Universe in it, as well as Carmen, who's a gorgeous, beautiful senior model. So the common denominator is confidence. All these women are confident, and you can be confident at any age. And what our shoes did was to not interfere in that confidence, because, you know, if you're hobbling down the street, you can't really exude much confidence. So I think that women gravitated to the Taran Rose shoes because of that. So when I sold the company, it went through a couple of hands, and that sense of care for the product and nurturing the alpha woman wasn't there. And now it's in new hands, and I feel that they are much more aligned to my original vision than anyone else had been.
That is really exciting. Taran, I'm going to ask you just to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break to give some love to our sponsor. And I also want to mention that Women Worldwide has joined the C-Suite Radio Network. And you can find all of our episodes on c-suiteradio.com. And be sure to check out all of the other great business podcasts while you're there.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Taran Rose and I were just chatting about her company that she built and the health of your feet and footwear and her new mission. Boy, Taran, we covered a lot of ground. And I did want you to discuss with us sort of in between, I guess it was after the sale of your company and maybe now before this relaunch, there was some kind of a reset for you. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that reset and some of the signs that led you to know you needed to reset.
Right, right. You know, I sold the company in a very large part because I was so burnt out. I was traveling over 200 days out of the year. I had 3 young children. My babies, you know, my boys were only 2 and 1 at the time. And I just had reached a point that I was really near a breakdown, I felt. I was overweight. I, of course, was a workaholic, so my relationships with my husband at the time and my children weren't the healthiest. So in some ways, it was a relief to sell the company. And, you know, I liken it to an alcoholic who sold her bar.
You know? Yeah.
So what I encourage entrepreneurs now, and the great thing about being a serial entrepreneur is that you get to reflect on what has happened in the past and use the functional things as well as get to address the dysfunctional things and make changes. So I want you, if I can just take a second to read a quote that I find so touching, and it's from Tennessee Williams, and it says, "We live in a perpetual burning building, and what we must say from it all the time is love." And what I was lacking at that time, even though I had great wealth and, you know, lived the jet set lifestyle, was I was truly lacking in love, and first and foremost, love for myself.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't taking care of myself. And therefore, my connection, even with my children, were superficial. So it's been a wonderful journey in the last 7 years to go through that reset. Because obviously, I didn't get to this point the day following the sale. You know, sure. I'm sitting there going, okay, what do I do next? And my lawyer says, I've got to go drink margaritas on the beach because I have a non-compete. So I hung out with the tech people, because the first time I started my company, we didn't even have Facebook. We barely had e-commerce. I remember when Tony Hsieh from Zappos approached me about selling on Zappos.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, things that we take for granted today, there was not LinkedIn, no Facebook, nothing. So I needed to get caught up on all of that and understand not just how to use these platforms, but how they're built, and get connected to the mind leaders of this world. So on the professional side, I did all of that. On the personal side, I lost weight. I had a trainer who really brought me back into great shape. And I spent time with my children. I mean, really spent time with them. So that was an incredible journey. And today, I practice what I say. So, I have an incredible yoga practice, and also I do a lot of weight training, because that's incredibly healthy for you. I'm not one of those that spends hours on a treadmill. I do high intensity interval training instead for cardio. And I'm an intermittent faster. So I fast between the hours of usually 9 to about 12 or 1, depending on the day, because I believe in the process of autophagia, which is brought about by fasting. And what autophagia is that it's basically your body fixing itself. It cleans itself.
I'd like to ask a question about that. That's interesting. So when you say that you're fasting every day, is that 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.?
And does... No, 9 p.m. So after I finish eating dinner, I don't eat again until 1 o'clock.
Got it.
Sometimes I only make it to 12. Because autophagy is brought on by intermittent fasting. And in 2016, the Nobel Prize in Medicine was awarded to the man who he's a Japanese gentleman. And I can't even read my own handwriting because I'm still a doctor at heart. But it's Yoshinori Osumi. So it's an incredibly important discovery. And we need autophagy to basically help clean out the system, you know, our dysfunctional cells. So I try to lead a ketogenic diet, but it's very, very difficult to have such a low carb diet, but I do my best, and I'm very happy. So, you know, green tea is also a good thing. Coffee, coconut oil, MCTs or medium chain triglycerides, curcumin are all important, because I feel that in this country, many of us are either insulin resistant or going down that path. Particularly, I see this in women going through menopause, because even fit women, I see, you know, they oftentimes have a thicker waistline, which is a sign of that. And so my theory is that when big food and the government decided that fat was bad and, you know, carbs were good, it really altered our metabolism. And so we need to reset that. And it can be reset with a fasting practice and, you know, natural things like green tea and curcumin, MCTs, coconut oils, things like that. And of course, aerobic exercise. So all of these things can be reset. And I feel that I'm on my way to actually looking, you know, as good as I was before I started medical school. I remember going on Jenny Craig during medical school because of the stress.
I see pictures of you. You look beautiful.
thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Well, you know, stress is a huge deal. Let's talk about stress for an entrepreneur.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Because I get it. You know, you're always running out of cash. You're faced with things that you never expected, because that's what you love about being an entrepreneur. You know, why did I leave medicine that's so secure to start a shoe company of all things?
Right, and you could have started a shoe company to help diabetics with their footwear, but you chose passion and that entrepreneurial journey.
Which is super risky,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I really, you know, I started to fill out job applications in orthopedics, and I saw black, I saw death, because it was going to be the death of my curiosity, because I was thinking, okay, I'll do the same, you know, handful of surgeries over and over again, and I'll have a nice life. But, you know, that I need more discovery. I need more curiosity. I need more risk.
Yeah.
Because that's how my brain works. I know that you saw my TEDx talk where I talk about this, in that there in people who, particularly immigrants, because they are high risk takers, and they've done population studies about this, they have a gene that codes for a dopamine receptor that's different. And basically, when you have the genetic makeup that I do, and I think about it, my parents were twice refugees. So these are people not afraid to, you know, go into the unknown. So I'm just wired to get off on that kind of excitement, even though it makes no sense to people who don't have this gene.
Right.
You know, they're like, oh, you know, what are you doing? And I understand that.
It's just
and
natural.
In a company, by the way, you want the people without this risk taking gene to be your CFO or your accountant.
Right.
by the way, the other funny story is I was very lucky that I met this accountant who was with me from almost day one. I kept all of the records from day one, which is a good idea, guys. Now it's easy with all of the software that we have. But back then I had paper, you know, and within the, you know, after the first six months, we did our financials. Not sure why, we just decided to do it. Oh, I think I was applying for a small business loan. That's why. So he taught me how to read a financial And a month later, we did something, and he did another monthly financial, and I told him, I said, it's wrong. And he's like, what are you talking about? What do you know about financials? I'm the accountant. I said, no, it's wrong. What you taught me last month, I applied that, and it's wrong. And lo and behold, I was correct.
You were correct? That's funny.
No, but it took me a long, long time to grasp the concept of cash flow versus profitability. And it seemed like, when was I ever going to learn? Because I would look at this financial statement and say, ooh, look at this profit we're making. Let's go open another store. Not realizing that that's completely dependent on cash flow. And I was just so, near death several times doing those things. So now I'm much better about looking at the cash flow. My financial model has both a P&L as well as a cash flow analysis now. I just think that it was a hard lesson to learn. In fact, I remember once having to put payroll on my American Express.
Yeah, I think we've all been there, right?
Yeah.
That's you do what you have to do, right? Like it's your baby. You would do anything.
And it's so disingenuous of any entrepreneur who says otherwise. I once had dinner with the founder of Relativity Media. Now I'm blanking out on his name, but he told me the story of how he was, retiling his bathroom because he was going to sell his house in order to finance his young media company at some point.
Yeah.
And, he's now a mogul.
Amazing.
So it's, we all have those stories. And it can be lonely when you're alone too. Another crazy story I have is that my daughter was born February 18th, 2000. And I remember on the 17th leaving the office at midnight. And I still remember this because the lock was...
The day before she was born, you were leaving the office at midnight.
Yes, at midnight. Okay. And I remember this because I was trying to lock the door and the lock was at the bottom. Okay, so I'm crouching down with this big belly. And I remember this is so difficult. And how am I going to pay the invoice for the shoes? I just don't have enough cash. I go home at 5 a.m. My water breaks. And I'm so happy because...
Kneeling down that did it?
it could be. It was a lot of pressure.
Right.
And I remember being so happy because I was thinking, I get at least 5 more days to figure out how to pay the bill because no one's going to come after me when I'm just, when I've just had a baby. Don't give me a break now. So that's what I was thinking. And I was so crazy that I literally took a shower, took my time. It was my first baby, even though I'm a doctor. And at the time, we lived 45 minutes away from the hospital where my OB-GYN was. And I stopped to pay the mortgage, it's just crazy things that I did. And I got chastised when I arrived. Dr. Cousineau says, never do that again. Because it took me 3 hours from the time I called her at 5 o'clock in the morning to get into the hospital. But my mother comes and after, as I was in labor, and she's like, wow, it's really strange. That stock that you have that was $2 for the last 3 years, it went up today to 18. And I was like, what? Sell it now. And that was how I paid off those invoices.
That's great.
And so my daughter, Annika, is my lucky baby.
Oh, she is a lucky baby. I'm surprised you didn't name her after the company, the stock rose. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, yes. Great stories, Taryn. You know what? Maybe you could just give a little bit of parting advice to women, maybe about the reset and how important it is to really focus on yourself. If you could just give some parting advice, what would you say to women who are just passionate, whether they're entrepreneurs or passionate in their job somewhere? Give them some advice.
I think the key thing is to get rid of judgment. Judgment of yourself, judgment of others. It's a prison that we don't need to live in. It's a self-imposed prison. And you can be much freer and really connect to who you are if you are not bound by those judgments. And I feel like particularly in our society, there's a lot of judgment of women and by women. And I would hope that, you know, we're all allowed to be in our comfort zone, whatever that may be. You know, I'm all about comfort, not only with your feet, but your soul. Well, I guess soul, both souls, right?
Pardon the pun, right?
Exactly.
That is really, really good advice. And I just have one last super easy question. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Well, for the footwear, the Taryn Rose footwear can be found at taryn rose.com, and many major retailers like Bloomingdale's, Dillard's Online, Zappos, I mentioned, Lord & Taylor, lots of boutiques around the country. They can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Real Taryn Rose. The company is at Official Taryn Rose. But please connect with me. I'm Taryn Rose in Beverly Hills, so I would love to hear from everyone and share my incredible journey. I'm thinking about starting a blog too. You know, that's
cool.
It's funny. Before medicine, I announced to my father in high school I was going to be a writer.
Oh.
And he literally left the table and didn't speak to me for 2 weeks. So I was thinking, well, you know, now is my opportunity. I don't think I would have been a great writer, but, you know, I could explore that.
Maybe you have another side hustle going on with your blog.
Yes, yes.
Well, Taryn, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show, to share your journey and your stories. Just loved your advice and all of your insights. So thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, really.
You're welcome. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.